You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast, and evidently, we're the number one national daily baseball podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. On today, the third day of March 2020, I offer a warning to the Mets, a plea to Jose Bautista, and have a little bit of bonus fun with Jeff Snyder of Locked On Dodgers. This show is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available on all the platforms where you get your podcasts. When you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. Maybe check out Locked On Dodgers with Jeff Snyder, who makes a cameo in today's show. Check us out on social media, Locked On MLB underscore net on Twitter, Locked On MLB on Instagram. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Well, the Yankees are finding themselves in a position where they didn't think they were going to be, which is having a pitching staff that is not quite as deep as they want it to be. You know, when you go into a season and you already know that Domingo Germán is suspended, you already know that CC Sabathia is retired, you're going to bank a lot on Gerrit Cole to be the number one starter, but they thought they were going to have Masahiro Tanaka and Luis Severino and James Paxton to give them a nice, big, thick rotation. One where they went in and said, hey, maybe in the offseason we should trade Jay Happ and maybe, just maybe, use that pitching depth to fill in some holes. Well, guess what happened? Well, we all know what happened. Severino's gone for the year. Paxton is gone for at least half the year. So all of a sudden, their deep pitching staff is pretty thin, especially if you consider the fact that Masahiro Tanaka, while he's never had the big injury, always seems to have a slight twinge or something that could throw him into the proverbial injured list doomsday that the Yankees have faced. Plus, they're facing Giancarlo Stanton and some other players, including Aaron Judge, may be injured as well. And so the Yankees may not find their solution in-house. They may want to try to find it in-city as they're taking a look at their neighbor, their cousin, the Mets. Now, the Mets are going to this season as a, I don't want to say a favorite, but certainly a team that has a tremendous shot to be a wild card contender, and if everything breaks right, a division champ. But I think this is a legit wild card contender that they have in Queens, even with the chaos revolving the manager and Carlos Beltran and everything like that. You go in, if you have a healthy Marcus Stroman, if you have a healthy Noah Syndergaard, if you have a rebounding Rick Porcello, and get anything out of Michael Wacha, and oh yeah, by the way, they have the two-time defending National League Cy Young Award winner in Jacob deGrom, then boom, you have yourself a really deep staff. And they have, in their 40-man roster, they have Corey Oswalt, they have Walker Lockett, they have Erasmo Ramirez is trying out for the team, they have Michael Wacha looking for his big comeback, Steven Matz is still effective, and so you could take a look and say, hey, wait a minute. Maybe the Yankees and the Mets can work something out. And apparently the Yankees are at least kicking the proverbial tires at Matz. And of course, it would be a tragedy if Matz played for anyone but the Mets. It's just too good. But you're taking a look. Could he fit? Could this be a nice fit for the Yankees to move Matz and his $5 million salary over for the 2020 season? Well, let me tell you something, Mets. Avoid that trade. Avoid that trade like the plague. Yes, I know it looks like you have tons of pitching depth and you can trade from strength. But do you need an example of why that's dumb to do? Okay, I already gave it to you with the Yankees. You don't know what is going to happen. I can't tell you how many times I've read about teams or followed teams that had too much pitching. They've got an excess of pitching. We don't know what to do with all of our pitching. And you know what happened? Eventually, it sorted itself out where they didn't have enough. Injuries, slumps, suspensions, all sorts of things pop up that you don't expect. And you wind up going, oh man, I wish we kept that pitcher. You know, one of the reasons why the Braves went to the playoffs for all those years in a row, yes, they had Glavine. Most of the time they had Maddox, they had Smoltz, and they always had a number four starter who would be someone else's ace, whether it be Steve Avery or Danny Nagel or Kevin Millwood. But they kept other players around. Kent Merker would have been a key starter on most people's teams. They kept his butt around. They kept around Mark Wohlers until he established himself. They kept around the Greg McMichaels. They kept around even the John Rockers, who really only had two good seasons, but they kept them around, the McClinchies and all these different players, because they knew they needed the pitching depth to get into the postseason. They only won one World Series. Shut up. They won one World Series. Ask Indians and Dodger fans if they would like to have only one World Series in a great run like that. Ask Met fans for that matter. So don't trade your depth in pitching. That's the reason that people think you're a playoff contender. And let me tell you something. You can't always bank on pitchers having great years, year in and year out, even if they win the Cy Young Award. May I introduce you to Blake Snell? Thank you very much. Hell, may I introduce you to Rick Porcello, who won the Cy Young Award in 2016 and was available for a song. Don't trade your pitching depth. Write that on a pillow. Get that embroidered on a pillow or tattoo it on your arm like memento. Get it done. Don't do it. It's your strength. We need pitching. Here's how much we need pitching. Jose Bautista wants to come back as a pitcher. Yeah, that same Jose Bautista, who for about an hour and a half was a Met, but you know, played, what, 19 seasons or something like that? He's going to be 39 or 40, had a bunch of all-star seasons, contended for a few MVPs. Tremendous player. And he had trouble finding a home after bouncing around between the Mets, Braves, and Phillies a couple years ago. Didn't play a game in the major leagues this year. He's trying to come back as a pitcher. And apparently he's hitting on the radar gun. The first number on the speed is a 9. And it's double digits. So it's not like he's throwing at 9 miles an hour. So maybe he can come back as a two-way pitcher. As a pitcher/slugger. The heck with a DH? Give us some Joey Bats. I'm all for it. I want Joey Bats to come back as a pitcher, and I'll tell you exactly where I want him to go. Texas. Come on. Have him playing with Rougned Odor, with that fan base that hates his guts. Now you got to cheer him on. Come on. As someone who is an outsider, that would be too delicious. Forget a pitcher throwing inside to Jose Bautista. It would be Bautista who would be throwing it inside himself. Oh, it'll be just too good. Hey, let me tell you what I'm going to do right now. Jeff Snyder was a guest on the podcast last week, and he's the host of Locked On Dodgers, and we had a really spirited conversation about the state of the Dodgers, their team going into 2020, their need to win a World Series title, his thoughts on the Astros mess, his thoughts on the Mookie Betts trade. But at one point during our conversation, and this happens from time to time, we went on a wild tangent, a weird tangent, and one that just did not fit in the show. But I really liked it. And so I kind of cut it out, put it in a folder, and now I'm going to share it with you. Here's a little bit of the cutting room floor and part of my conversation with Jeff Snyder, which began because we were having this conversation on a video chat. I was noting the bobbleheads that were right behind him, kind of like a wall of fame behind his desk when we were having our interview. So here's a little bit of a tangent with me and Jeff Snyder.
and you see all the bobbleheads sitting behind him, and it looks like the scene at the end of Avengers Endgame when all the Doctor Strange portals open up and all the Avengers all come out and they're all lining up ready to assemble. It's like a bunch of Dodgers saying assemble with a few non-Dodgers sprinkled in there, I see.
Yeah, I've got an Italian sausage that I got at a Brewers game.
I've got an Italian sausage bobblehead. It's not just a sausage sitting on his shelf.
There. Yeah. To the extent that a sausage can have a head that bobbles, it is a bobblehead. I've got an Alexi Ramirez from the White Sox. I got on that same road trip when I got the Italian sausage. That was 2012. And then I've got a Cole Calhoun that I got at Angels game in June of 2014. And everything else came from the Dodgers. Not all of them, obviously, are still on the Dodgers, but a lot like that Avengers scene. You look up there and you think, oh, yeah, that guy was on the Dodgers. Oh, I kind of remember that guy.
Who's the most obscure Dodger you have up there? Not maybe just in terms of obscure, in terms of thinking about them as a Dodger.
Maybe Brian Wilson. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's the Babe Ruth one up there. He never played
with
for the Dodgers.
Dodgers. That's
he,
right.
He
that's
coached
a coach
for the Dodgers. I think I'm just turning to look and a lot of guys who didn't spend very long, Howie Kendrick kind of is a sore spot there on my wall now after
ironically
what he did to the Dodgers last year.
Yeah.
So almost all of them have kind of a soft spot in my heart. The Dodgers do a lot of bobbleheads, but it's generally guys who you would think, oh yeah, that makes sense that they do a bobblehead of him. Brian Wilson might be he was a guy who, there was question that season whether he would make it long enough on the roster for his bobblehead night because he was lousy that year. And his bobblehead night wasn't until early August, I think. And he did make it, but it was up in the air there for a while.
I'll just say this is totally off any path, but in Los Angeles, I think one of the most obscure Dodger T-shirts, when people wear those T-shirts that look like the uniform with the name and number on the back.
Yep.
And a lot of times you'll get, there's a lot of Kershaws, there's a lot of Valenzuelas and Hershisers and Gibsons and all the ones like that. The one that I think is the most obscure, not in terms of him being an obscure player, but most people forgot this player ever was a Dodger, is I saw a Dodger Jim Thome recently.
Yeah.
And he was only there for like a few months, if I remember correctly.
If that, yeah, not even that. He might have even been an August trade, not even a July trade. He might have been a, August 31st deadline trade. And I believe the Dodgers are the only team Thome played for who he never homered for.
Oh, wow. I know he played the postseason with him. He was like a pinch hitter in, I think it was 09, was it? 08 or 09, one of those 2 years. No, it must have been 09 because he was with the White Sox in 08. And the only reason I remember that is the White Sox won the division in 08 in a one-game playoff against Minnesota, and they won it on a Jim Thome home run. Final score 1-0.
Yeah, so he played 17 games for the Dodgers and got 17 plate appearances. So, he wasn't going in as a defensive replacement, so I'll let you figure out what his role was on that team.
We are way off the beaten path here, but my father and I used to take baseball trips and we would fly to one city. This is in the 90s before StubHub, before Google Maps or anything like that. We did everything. We had to get the Bill Mazeroski guide at the beginning of the year to get all the schedules and try to circle where we can go to one city one day. The other team will be playing there. We can drive from Cleveland to Pittsburgh to Cincinnati and catch a bunch of games. And we went to the old Mistake by the Lake, the old Cleveland Stadium. And that was just an empty, it was beautiful in its complete misguided design. That was just way too big for a baseball stadium, but it was,
yeah, it held what, 85,000 or something?
75,000. It was better suited for football, but they built it for the Indians. And even if they got 20,000 there, there was tumbleweed blowing. And believe me, there was not 20,000 when we went there in 1993. It was the last year there. And they called up a kid from the minor leagues named Jim Thome. And we saw him homer. And we're like, who is this young kid? He may be something, this Jim Thome. And so we were in early on Jim Thome, my dad and I. So
Who were they playing that game?
Texas. And I remember that because it was Nolan Ryan's final season, and he was signing autographs down by the dugout. But the autograph that I wanted, and I wanted badly, was the person who threw out the first pitch, which was the author Gene Shepard.
Oh, yeah.
You wrote
Christmas Story.
A Christmas Story, right. And my father was a huge Gene Shepard fan because he was an author, and he also had a radio show where, if you'd seen A Christmas Story, he's the writer of the – he wrote the movie, but he also is the narrator, you know, Ralphie as an adult.
Yep.
And he had and has a great storytelling voice. And A Christmas Story is a compilation of his – of some of the stories that he wrote, of the short stories. And he used to write these short stories as – and tell them on the radio long before A Christmas Story came out. And one of the stories, my father took me to see him perform live after A Christmas Story. He did this long concert in Boston. And one of the stories he told was a baseball story about his father basically taunting Lou Gehrig during a Yankees-White Sox game, and Gehrig looking at him and then homering, and everyone blaming his father for Lou Gehrig's homer. And at the game, a bunch of people were surrounding him because he threw out the first pitch for some reason at the Indians game. I think they were filming another one of the movies or something. And I, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, I love the scene where he licked the flagpole, or, oh, I like the scene where Santa pushed him down the slide. And I got him to sign my thing and said, I love the story about Gehrig, you're a bum. And he looked up like someone knew a story that wasn't from A Christmas Story. And he had a huge grin on his face. Like, ooh, you did a deep cut on Gene Shepard. So,
I have a quiz for you, Sully. I found that game.
Yeah.
The Indians hit 4 home runs. Who were the 3 Indians besides Jim Thome who homered that game?
Oh God. You know what? I'm not going to cheat and look. I'm going to guess, and I may be wrong. I'm going to say, did Sandy Alomar hit one?
He did.
Did Candy Maldonado hit one?
Nope.
Okay,
Kenny Maldonado didn't even play that game.
Okay, do you know what I may be thinking, because he did play for the Indians for a little bit, but that may not have been that year. Maybe conflating years. Sandy Alomar, did Baerga hit?
The other two were lefties.
Let's see, was like Wayne Kirby?
Nope.
Do you know what? I know Paul Sorrento.
Paul Sorrento was one.
Oh, it was. Oh, my goodness. Yep. I thought he was still with Minnesota at that point. So, okay, Paul Sorrento.
The other one was actually a switch hitter, but he hit it left-handed.
Well, it wasn't Eddie Murray because he wasn't there yet. Did I say Baerga?
You guessed him, but it wasn't him.
I don't
remember. Reggie Jefferson.
Oh, Reggie Jefferson, who later played on the 99 Red Sox.
Yep.
Oh, I should have remembered that because I always liked him. He was a good – he could never start, but when he played, he would always seem to get a double in the gap. Oh, my goodness.
When you said, guess what we're going to talk about, I bet no one guessed trivia from the August 13th, 1993 Indians-Rangers game.
Nope. Not even me. Not even me. All right. Let's get to the subject of the Dodgers, for goodness sakes, for the love of all that's holy. We went on a tangent. We talked about bobbleheads, Gene Shepard, and quizzing a 1993 game between the Cleveland and Texas. Okay.
Let me just mention really quick before we move on,
yeah.
Reggie Jefferson hit that home run off of Roger Pavlik, and I just wanted to guarantee that we will be the only baseball podcast today that says the words Roger and Pavlik together.
That's a challenge, because I'm also going to be guest hosting Locked On Angels. I may find a way to sneak in Roger Pavlik.
Look at you, sneaky devil.
Just to spite you. Just to spite you.
Thanks, Jeff. And yes, when I guest hosted on Locked On Angels last week, I did include, for reasons that must have been very confusing for the listeners, a reference to Roger Pavlik, an out-of-the-blue reference to Roger Pavlik, and that was solely to meet Jeff Snyder's challenge that will be more than one podcast going on mentioning Roger Pavlik. So there you go. Hey, listen to Locked On Dodgers. It's a terrific podcast. We're just talking about the team that I very well may pick to win the World Series again, how that worked out for me last year. Grow the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. You can also follow us on all the platforms where you listen to podcasts. Check us out on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net, on Instagram, LockedOnMLB. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Going on tangents with Jeff Snyder and begging the Mets to do the right thing and Joey Bats to find a home in Texas. This has been the Locked On MLB podcast for the third day of March 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.